ACATRA Foundation presents the ACATRA Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of ACATRA AI. Welcome to the ACATRA Dialogue. Today we're doing a deep dive into a really powerful and sometimes controversial memoir, American Sniper, by Chris Kyle.
That's right. Kyle was a U.S. Navy SEAL, probably best known as the most lethal sniper in American military history. His story gives us this incredibly raw look into the life of a modern warrior.
And our goal here isn't really to get into the politics of the Iraq War or anything like that. It's more about, well, understanding the person, what was going on inside his head, the realities of combat he faced, and the impact it had, you know, on him and his family.
Exactly. We're working from detailed summaries of his book, so we're getting his perspective in his own words, more or less. It's a unique chance to step into a world that, frankly, most of us just can't imagine.
It really challenges your ideas about what heroism means, what sacrifice entails, all of that.
Definitely. And the human side of it, duty, devastation, the whole spectrum.
So let's start with the man himself. Chris Kyle, born 1974, passed away in 2013. Became this huge figure, 160 confirmed kills over four tours in Iraq. What kind of background produced someone like that?
Well, he grew up in Texas, pretty rural, conservative background, lots of ranching, rodeo, and crucially, hunting.
Ah, okay. So the marksmanship skills started early.
They certainly did. But it was more than just shooting. That upbringing instilled this strong sense of self-reliance, you know, traditional values, almost a kind of rugged individualism.
And wasn't there a key lesson from his father? Something that really shaped his worldview.
Yes, absolutely central. His dad taught him this idea. The world has sheep, wolves, and sheepdogs. The sheep are the innocent, the wolves prey on them, and the sheepdogs. Their job is to protect the flock.
And he was told to be a sheepdog.
Exactly. Be the protector. And Kyle took that to heart. It became his moral compass, especially after 9/11. That really solidified it. He saw military service as fulfilling that sheepdog role, protecting the innocent from the wolves.
That's a powerful framework to carry into life, let alone into war. So that path takes him from Texas to aiming to be a Navy SEAL. That transformation, it must have been intense.
Oh, incredibly. BUDS, Basic Underwater Demolition SEAL training, is famously brutal. Kyle talks about it as a crucible, you know, designed to break you down.
Physically and mentally, right.
Totally. To find your limits and push past them, but also, crucially, to build this unbreakable bond with the guys next to you. Brotherhood. Absolute refusal to quit. It basically forges you into a different kind of person, an elite warrior who trusts his team implicitly.
So after making it through BUDS, he deploys Iraq, his first taste of actual combat. How did that begin to shape him?
He describes his first kill, well, with a striking lack of emotion, professional detachment, maybe. He saw it simply as a necessary act. Protecting Marines on the ground, a job to be done.
It's a part of the mission.
Pretty much. He was there for the invasion, the first battle of Fallujah, incredibly fierce fighting. But a huge turning point, something he really emphasizes, was losing his friend and teammate, Mark Lee.
The first SEAL killed in Iraq.
Yeah. That loss hit him hard. It seemed to really harden his resolve. And it fueled this intense hatred for the enemy. He started calling them savages. Any gray area just vanished.
That personal loss really crystallized things for him, it sounds like. No more ambiguity.
None. And as he went on, especially the third tour in Ramadi, that's when his reputation just exploded.
The legend.
That's what the U.S. troops called him. The insurgents had another name, Al-Shaitan Ramadi.
The devil of Ramadi. Wow. They even put a bounty on him.
They did. It was incredibly dangerous, complex urban warfare, making split-second life or death calls. He talks about situations, agonizing ones, like deciding whether a woman or even a child might be carrying a bomb.
How did he justify those kinds of decisions to himself?
His conviction was absolute. If it saved American lives, it was justified. Full stop. He famously said his only regret was not killing more enemies because every kill potentially saved one of his guys.
So no remorse for the kills themselves?
None that he expressed. His regret was focused entirely on the teammates he couldn't save. It's a very specific, very warrior-centric moral code.
Which brings us to his final tour. Still highly effective, but the toll is starting to show.
Definitely. This tour included that famous shot, 2,100 yards, over a mile.
An incredible feat of marksmanship.
Technically, yes. But he talks about it very matter-of-factly. More tactical significance than personal glory. But this tour also brought another heavy blow. His close friend Ryan Biggles-Job was blinded by an enemy sniper.
And that affected Kyle deeply.
More than any danger to himself, it seems. Again, it underscores that the suffering of his brothers in arms was his greatest source of pain. And alongside all this, he couldn't ignore that his family life back home was really struggling.
Let's unpack that a bit, the warrior's psyche. This duality you mentioned, seeing himself as a protector, a sheepdog, not a killer.
Yeah, that's key to understanding him. It wasn't about enjoying killing. It was about fulfilling that protective duty. The violence was the means to an end. It gave him this clear, almost simple justification, good versus evil.
And that black and white view, calling the enemy savages.
Yeah.
He saw that as necessary.
Necessary for survival, I think. For effectiveness. In that killer-be-killed environment, he felt you couldn't afford nuance, couldn't afford to see the enemy's humanity if it meant hesitating when your teammates' lives were on the line. It was psychological armor.
So what was the ultimate driving force? Was it patriotism? Duty? Hatred?
All those probably played a part. But overwhelmingly, the book suggests it was love and loyalty for his SEAL brothers, protecting the guys on the ground. That was mission number one, always.
That bond seems incredibly powerful.
It is. He even said, I don't have to psych myself up. I look through the scope and kill my enemy before he kills one of my people. It sounds cold, but it's about efficiency driven by that protective instinct for his team.
But there's that paradox, too. He admits loving war. The adrenaline, the sense of purpose, the camaraderie. He felt more alive there than at home.
Which is a really difficult thing to grapple with, right? Both for him and for us reading it. That internal conflict, loving his family deeply, but also feeling this pull towards the intensity of combat that created huge tension in his personal life.
Speaks volumes about how purpose and belonging shape us.
Absolutely. And to do that job, especially as a sniper, required intense compartmentalization. Dehumanizing the target, seeing evil, not a person. It sounds harsh, but from his perspective, it was a necessary psychological tool to function and protect his own.
The book isn't just his voice, though. His wife, Taya, her perspective is woven in. How does that change the picture?
Oh, it's crucial. Taya's sections really bring home the other side of the coin, the war at home, the immense strain on the family.
The loneliness, the fear.
Exactly. Constant fear for his safety, the difficulty reconnecting with a husband who's emotionally miles away, maybe more comfortable in combat boots than at the dinner table. Her voice highlights the huge, often silent sacrifices military families make.
And that strain eventually leads him to leave the Navy, right? To try and save the marriage. That must have been a brutal transition.
Incredibly difficult. He talks about feeling a loss of identity, purpose. The brotherhood was gone. Civilian life felt alien.
Did he struggle?
Yeah, the book mentions issues with alcohol, temper, just difficulty relating to people who couldn't possibly understand what he'd been through. He did eventually find a new sense of purpose helping other veterans, which is how the memoir ends on that hopeful note.
Although tragically, his life was cut short after the book was published.
Right. Which adds another layer to his story about finding peace and purpose after war.
So, stepping back, what are the big takeaways for us listening to this? How does Kyle's story resonate beyond the military context?
Well, first, it really does offer a window into the veteran experience, the intensity of those bonds, the psychological coping mechanisms like dehumanization, the sheer disorientation of coming home. It builds empathy, helps bridge that gap between civilian and military life.
I can see that. And his mindset, the focus, the control under pressure, does that apply elsewhere?
I think so. You see parallels in other high-stakes professions, maybe. First responders, surgeons, leaders in crises. That ability to compartmentalize, stay calm, execute the mission. It's a case study in mental fortitude, even if the context is extreme.
It also makes you think about purpose, doesn't it? His struggle after leaving the SEALs.
Definitely. It highlights that universal human need for identity and meaning. What happens when the role that defined you is gone? It prompts you to think about your own sources of purpose, maybe ones that aren't tied to just one thing, like a job.
And Taya's perspective really drives home the full scope of sacrifice. It's not just the person in uniform.
Not at all. It's the families, too. The loneliness, the fear, the secondary trauma. It's a collective burden, and her voice makes that undeniable.
What about his moral framework, that very black and white view? Is there anything relatable there, even if we disagree with the specifics?
Well, maybe not the specifics, but the need to create a framework in morally complex situations. I think that's relatable. We all have to navigate ethical gray areas. Kyle's way was stark simplification, good versus evil, team first. For us, it might be about clarifying our own core values or priorities when facing tough choices.
Yeah.
It's about how we make sense of difficult moral demands.
And finally, that intense SEAL brotherhood. Any lessons there for teamwork in general?
Absolutely. The loyalty, the mutual dependence, the shared commitment to a goal, even under extreme duress. Those principles of trust and sacrifice are powerful foundations for any strong team in any field.
So if we had to distill this down, three key insights from Kyle's story from American Sniper, what would they be?
Okay, three takeaways. First, maybe an emotional one. The immense, often hidden cost of war extends far beyond the battlefield, deeply affecting the families and the warrior's own soul long after the fighting stops. Taya's perspective really drives this home.
Right, the unseen costs. What about an intellectual insight?
Intellectually, I think it's the power of a defined worldview, however polarizing, in enabling action in extreme circumstances. Kyle's sheepdog mentality and his clear good versus evil framework allowed him to function decisively where moral ambiguity might be paralyzing. It shows how crucial psychological framing is under pressure.
Okay, that makes sense. And a universal lesson, something practical.
Universally, perhaps it's the profound human need for purpose and belonging. Kyle's intense identification with his SEAL role, his love for the Brotherhood, and his struggle to find meaning afterwards that reflects a deep truth about all of us. We need to feel part of something bigger and know what our mission is, both in work and in life.
That's a powerful trio, American Sniper, then. It really forces you to confront some uncomfortable truths, doesn't it?
It absolutely does, these paradoxes, the very qualities that make someone an effective, even heroic warrior, that unwavering conviction, the ability to dehumanize, maybe even that draw to combat's intensity, those can be the biggest obstacles to finding peace back home.
It leaves you wondering, what is the true psychological and moral cost of being that sheepdog? And maybe more importantly, how do we as a society get better at supporting those who carry that weight for us?
That's the lingering question, isn't it?
Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekadra Foundation.